Welcome to episode 5 of the Care Deeply podcast. I'm your host, Yolan Morris. So I took a break from publishing this podcast for the last 2 weeks. One, because breaks and rest are necessary. I went from the girl who hustles and slays to the girl who rests and prays, simply because the old way of living wasn't working for me anymore. The last couple of weeks have been hectic, to say the least, at work, as I've been finalizing a few highly visible projects. And when I interviewed today's guest a few weeks ago, her words, "make room for joy," kept reverberating in my mind and deep down in my soul. So my break was also about that, making room for joy, which for me meant logging off of social media and going for long walks after a hectic day, and also something new, decluttering and renovating my home. After 10 years in my apartment, it was definitely time for a refresh. But back to today's episode. Our guest is Vanessa Joy Walker. Yes, Joy is her middle name. And she truly is full of inexplicable joy and hope. I say that because her story is complicated. It's filled with heartbreak after heartbreak and loss after loss. Yet she finds joy in the everyday and even wrote a book about it, Make Room for Joy: How to Choose Hope and Cultivate Joy in the Middle of Life's Most Complicated Seasons, available on August 4th. So in this episode, we discuss Vanessa's journey through cancer, betrayal, abandonment, and grief. And she will give you, like she gave me, the equation to increase your joy quotient no matter what season you're in. Let's learn how we can care deeply together in these seasons of life. Hi, Vanessa, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you. As I was saying to you earlier, I think very highly of you as a person. You know, you are always someone who has been spoken highly of in the circles that we've been in, whether it's at church or outside of church. And so I just wanted to learn more about your journey and introduce our listeners to you, Vanessa Joy Walker. So can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
I guess that I'll start by saying the feeling is mutual. We have known of each other, but not really spoken that much to each other over the years. But I've always heard such really wonderful things about you and watched you from afar with all of the great content you're putting out there, and how you're such a gatherer of people and minds and hearts. And I think that's really a special thing. So I'm excited to be here and share my story. I have a complicated life. I would say most people do. Mine just appears to be a little bit more complicated on the outside, perhaps, when it comes to the circumstances. I was born in Canada, and I was abandoned when I was born and put up for adoption and adopted. And so my life really started in this very interesting manner. I always say that I was one person's crisis, yet another person's gift, wow, all in the same moment. And that's really an interesting way to start life, and to begin to form your identity around that. I grew up, my dad was a pastor. I grew up in Canada. We lived in little houses next to little churches, my whole life. All of our churches were really small, and we always lived in a house that was owned by the church. And that was interesting. I could tell you many, many stories about all kinds of crazy stuff that happened there. When you live next to the church, everyone thinks it is the church. So anyone who goes to the church thinks that they can walk in at any given moment. I remember, I'll tell you one quick story. When I was a teenager, I was rebelling against that a little bit. So I decided on Sunday mornings, I would walk around in my underwear. And one time an elder came running into my house and I just stood there in my kitchen until he left. My mother was not very happy with me, but that man never came back to our house without being invited. So, I grew up, it was interesting because I was always the kid who felt like they had to, I always thought I had to be the good kid. My brother had a lot of problems growing up. He's also adopted and, you know, had his own struggles. And so it felt like I was the kid who had to keep it together. And that was really hard for me to do that. My mom struggled with a mental illness and my dad struggled with depression, which in the church wasn't addressed. And there wasn't room to address that in the church back then. There's not a lot of room to address that now, but there was even less room back then. And so it felt like there was a lot of things that I wasn't free to express or even ask questions about. And when I was a teenager, I found out that my dad had an affair and we were forced out of the church we were at. And I was we basically became homeless and I was forced to move in with a family member in another town and finish high school somewhere else. And, you know, that was a turning point in my life because at that point I just wanted to get out. I wanted to flee. I was like, you know, there's got to be a better life. I wasn't able to really have gratitude or embrace gratitude or step into the gratitude that was available for me to step into. At that point, I just was feeling very victimish, and if that's a word, and I was, I had been hurt legitimately, and I just wanted to escape. And yeah. I did. I went away to college. I didn't realize how all of these identity issues had been piling themselves up on top of me. And eventually it all kind of came to a head when I met this great guy and I thought this was it. You know, this was my answer. He checked all the boxes and he was going to, you know, kind of be my ticket to a new life, a different life. I could reinvent myself. And the short story is that didn't work out exactly the way I had planned. And after getting married young and being married quite some time, he told me he didn't want to be married anymore. And that was devastating. You know, some people have stories where they are in really difficult, bad marriages. And my marriage wasn't like that. I always say my ex-husband was a good husband until he stopped being a good husband.
Wow.
But when he stopped, he stopped. And he really turned into a different person. And I think it's a clear example of when you're being wooed by the world, at some point you have to choose.
Yeah.
And he was looking for happiness and he wasn't finding it in what God had given him. And so he chose the world and he couldn't choose me and choose the world because I represented something that was attached to his faith and something that was attached to so many other things. And he really turned into a totally different person for a period of time. And it was incredibly painful. I was an opera singer at the time. which is, I think people always find fascinating. I was taught music and was an aspiring artist. You know, it's always, it's more romantic to be an aspiring artist than a struggling artist,
right?
You know, and I think when we first got into it, you know, I remember my ex-husband would say, "Oh, you know, my wife's an aspiring opera singer," and that was all great until we were living in New York City after September 11th and had no money, and I was now a struggling artist, and. During that period of time, after he really said, you know, I just don't want to be in this relationship, after I kind of initially pulled myself off the floor, I, you know, God really began to speak to me during that time. And what I realized is that whole journey was not just about him. It was about me. And it was about God really wanting to have a deeper relationship with me. He didn't want it to be based on what I grew up with or what my parents told me I should do or what the church told me I should do. Because listen, my ex-husband and I, we did all the things we were supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know, we went to a Christian college. We, you know, waited till we got married to have sex. We checked all of the boxes, you know, and yet we really did compartmentalize God in our marriage. And without God at the center of your marriage, it is really difficult to have, to sustain a really happy, joyful, relationship.
Yeah.
I don't know how people do it.
Right.
And so God really began to work on me, and I was devastated. I mean, there were long periods of time where I didn't think I would make it through, where I really, many, many times where I thought seriously about taking my own life. And I would lay on my apartment floor sometimes for 6 or 8 hours in a day. And one day I just started getting up, and I would leave my house. And I realized, you know, I needed to find a job that wasn't only music, because that wasn't going to pay my bills. And I began to seek God in a way that I had never sought him before. And right around that time, after a couple of years of going through this with my ex-husband, I also got cancer.
Wow.
Which was, you know, crazy. I mean, you just can't make it up. And it's interesting because people would always say, you know, like, why haven't you divorced him? Why aren't you, you know, why are you still in this marriage, even though he's not living with you and you're estranged from him? And I said, well, God really spoke to me. And he said, you know, I'm going to release you from this marriage when the time is right. But don't do it until I tell you. And I mean, this was years. I mean, this was like 3-4 years of going through this. And at that point, I had realized that the most important thing in my life was having the peace.
Yeah.
The peace that passes all understanding. Because I knew what it was like to not have that. And I wasn't willing to give that up. So I was not going to file for divorce. I was not going to do anything until God woke me up in the middle of the night and told me to do it.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. You know, one night he really did wake me up and say, it's time. And, I still gave my ex-husband a lot of opportunities to reconcile, which we did. And I wanted to know that when I walked away from that relationship, that I could do it and feel totally free.
Yeah. No regrets.
Yeah, no regrets. And really feel like I had given every opportunity for restoration and every opportunity for reconciliation, because I knew that it was going to be hard to move on from that. And even though I know it was the right thing, it was still hard to move on from it. I think there's a reason why God says he hates divorce.
Right.
He doesn't say divorce doesn't exist, but there's a reason why he hates it, because it's a really painful thing. It's a painful thing for the person involved, but it's also a painful thing for Mr. Walker, my current, you know, my husband, who I love and I adore and I'm married to now. But, you know, he also has to really deal with the effects of my divorce and the things that the scars that were created because of that. So, I mean, I know, Yolan, you know, I have a crazy life. We could use this whole podcast to tell you all of the crazy things that have happened in my life. I won't do all of it. So I'll just say that, you know, God, through a whole bunch of miraculous things, you know, God really brought me back into music and singing by singing at church. And I ended up meeting this great guy, and we got married, and we really wanted to start a family. And having a family was really important to me. Having a biological family was important to me because I'm adopted. And shortly after we were married, I found out I had cancer again. And I also had a genetic mutation. And, you know, we had to make a lot of difficult decisions that would significantly alter our future and the way we dreamt about our future.
For sure.
And that was really hard. But I'm still here.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really the beautiful thing. And sometimes I just remind myself of that, you know, when I'm getting really hard on myself. I'm a control freak and I'm a planner.
Most women are. Yes. Most women I know are.
Right. I mean, we like, and we like to just, I like a plan A, a plan B, a plan C, a backup plan, a plan around the corner.
Right.
And so, really my whole life has been an exercise in submitting that control freak nature over to God, especially as an adult. And especially in the last 10 years of my life, 10 or 15 years of my life. I ended up, when I was really desperate for a job and stepping away from my opera career, working for a documentary film company, and I've actually been a part of this organization now for about 13 years. And I so appreciate partnering with this organization. We actually have a learning educational firm now. We do diversity, equity, and inclusion work. We go into schools and organizations and corporations and help people have start the conversation about equity and inclusion. And it's just a really great experience for me because I've learned so much there. I feel like I've grown up there. My eyes have been opened there. I'm a better person. I'm a more thoughtful, empathetic person because of being a part of that community. I'm more aware of my privilege because of that. And it's also helped me see the church differently and see the opportunities for the church to really take on the role that I think it actually should have to be more active in issues around equity and inclusion, especially the white evangelical church, because though your guests can't see me, I am white. So,
and you're married to a black man.
I'm married to a man of color. Yeah. So, you know, I never want to ever think that I understand or can relate to the life of someone who is a person of color, because I cannot. But I, because of my unique circumstance and where I work and who I'm married to, I have insight at least into watching some of the things that do go on and really go on. And I also have an opportunity to speak to other white people in a way that perhaps, you know, my husband honestly is too tired to.
Yeah, he doesn't, for sure. For sure.
So I remember one time we had been married, I think, a little while. We've been married almost 9 years. And, you know, I had just kind of got into my whole, you know, really learning about privilege and racism and, you know, all this stuff. And I was that typical, somewhat liberal white woman who just was it was very inspirational to be, for equity and inclusion. And I remember saying to him one day, you know, you really shouldn't be doing that because they're, you know, that's not a good company to, you know, go to, and you shouldn't be eating at that restaurant. And he looked me right in the eye and he said, honey, you just got excited about this. This is my life. Okay. So you need to just take a step back and not tell me what I should or should not do. And I was
words.
But he was so right, you know, because I was in this, I was just learning about this. And he was like, listen, it's great that you now all of a sudden this is an interest to you, but that's a privilege.
Yeah.
Like that's a privilege that you have. And, you know, it's been a journey for me, and I make a lot of mistakes, and I still make mistakes to this day. Right. But I have such a dream and a hope that the church can get it together and we can begin to do the work that needs to be done. I know that's a little tangential here, but
No, it's important. And I think it speaks to all aspects of care, right?
Yeah.
Caring not just for last week's episode, we talked about the widows and the orphans and even the singles. But you also bring in a different perspective in terms of caring, how as the church we can care for people who are of different races.
Yes.
Right. Racial equity is important. And I think for so long, people would say, I'm colorblind.
Right.
And that's like, that's their way of saying, I don't see color. I don't see you. I just only see God's child. Mm-hmm. Right. You're a child of God. And that's all I see. Mm-hmm. But it is important to say, no, I am. When I walk outside of these church doors, I am a Black woman. Yeah. I am an Asian woman. I am, you know, that's all the world sees me as. Mm-hmm. And you might see me as, I might be colorblind to you, but how I live and operate in this world is different than how you live and operate in this world. And I think that's important. And I think that's one way that we care about each other is we can see the other person's perspective. Mm-hmm. We can empathize with it. But if we're always colorblind, we can't empathize.
That's right.
Because you're just like, oh, just shut up about being Black or shut up about this or that. It's not important. And you're like, but it is important. Mm-hmm. If I can't buy a house in the same neighborhood as you, if I can't do a lot of the things that you can do, like wear a face mask to protect myself, then it, you know, it, those things do matter.
No, they really do matter. And I think that, growing up, in the church, I was always taught, you know, that you should love people, right? That you shouldn't be mean to people.
Right.
And you should care for people in that way. But I didn't see it. I saw it as, you know, when we talk about it at work, you know, individual meanness, right? Mm-hmm. And that really isn't what the systemic issues of, you know, systemic racism is in this country. It's not about individual meanness. You can be nice to someone and still participate in a society that is set up to help people that look like me and hurt people that look like you.
Yeah.
And this doesn't mean I'm a bad person. That's just true.
Yeah.
So accepting that, especially as a church,
yeah,
for some reason, so difficult for the white evangelical church. It feels like such a personal attack. Well, you're saying I'm racist. Well, no, I'm saying that you have privileges that other people don't have, and we have to acknowledge that so that we can really extend help in the way that I think God would want us to help, like use our privilege in a way that is that helps to actually dismantle the systems, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And if that was as important to the white evangelical church as being nice to everyone and as going on, you know, mission trips, I think we would be in a different place in the world.
You know, and one of the things we talk about racial equity in the church, but even something like even equity for women in the church is missing as well. In a lot of churches, women are not allowed to be pastors. They're not allowed to speak. You know, we've heard instances of female leaders being told to just go home.
Yep.
Shut up and go home.
Right.
You know, and so it is a very much, yes, patriarchal society, but then also very white patriarchal structure. And,
definitely.
You know, and something we discussed on the podcast last week was about even singles and where do they fit in this kind of structure where if the men are at the head and the women are just the wives, well, what happens when you're not a wife? Mm-hmm. Who are you then in this structure? And so, Vanessa, you've been married, you've been single, and you've been married again. Have you noticed anything in terms of whether you've been treated differently or just how you viewed the world from all of those different perspectives? First of all, yes, you've being a white woman, but then also being married, being single, being married again, all of those different aspects.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the first thing I would say is that I never thought that I could be single. Like that was never an option for me. Like I never thought, oh, well, I'm just going to be a single person, right? Mm-hmm. The goal was you've got to get married because that creates the identity that you need to have to be a success.
Yeah.
So I would say that when my ex-husband said, you know, I don't want to be married anymore, it wasn't just the pain of that betrayal and the adultery and all kinds of other things that went on there. It was this internal torment of saying, I don't know that I can exist on my own. I don't know that I'm worthy of anything. I didn't even think I could take care of myself.
Wow.
And I didn't have a lot of people around me telling me that I could.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I actually thought, well, I'm going to have to, I right away started thinking, well, if I'm not going to be with him, who am I going to be with? And maybe I should leave New York because it'll be easier for me to find someone to marry and, you know, I'll just settle for someone who's, you know, maybe older and maybe he's a widow, but like I had all these thoughts about how am I going to fill that void because I need that to survive.
Wow.
And it was it was actually my boss at the time who at some point took me aside and she said, you know, I don't want to overstep my boundaries here, but she had also gone through a divorce in her early 30s. And so she kind of recognized what I was struggling with. And she said, you know, if I could give you some advice, I would really suggest starting to separate yourself from this man financially.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the scariest thing. I was like, oh, what does that even look like? And she really encouraged me to do that. And I did that. And as I did that, it was a slow process. And I began to, you know, pay my own bills and buy my, I remember the first time I bought a piece of furniture all on my own. It seems like such a little thing, but for someone who had been married, I mean, I got married when I was 21 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, for my 21st birthday, my ex-husband took me to the small Italian restaurant that we were going to have our reception at.
Wow.
So it was like a whole new world. Mm-hmm. And I had took on the identity of kind of a woman scorned.
Mm-hmm.
And I hung out with only deaconesses and stuff at church because I was like, well, I don't know what to do. And it was the strangest thing. And I lived this kind of life as a nun for years. And I remember it was actually a pastor at my church that finally said to me one day, you know, you got to get out of the house. And I was like, well, I do get out of the house. He's like, no, I don't mean to go visit the blind lady down the street. I mean, like, go out for brunch, like,
right,
hang out with people your own age, you know, like it's okay that you're in that you're not divorced yet or whatever, like just get out.
Yeah.
And I began to do that. And I realized like, oh, like, I'm a person. I mm-hmm. can exist on my own, and I'm funny and I'm pretty and I have something to offer. I don't have to be a part of a unit to have value and worth right. and add value and right. to be a to have a contribution. Yet I will say there were still a lot of times at church where I felt like people were always trying to set me up with someone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was like, they still saw me as this eligible woman. Oh my mm-hmm. gosh, you're beautiful. You're smart. You're talented. You know, you make the perfect wife.
Right.
And people were constantly trying to set me up with other people. And it was like, it was so strange to me. Yet the other side of it was when they saw me start having a life, I actually had someone approach me at church and said, you know, what are you doing? Aren't you still praying for your husband? And I was like, whoa, like just so much judgment everywhere.
So much.
This person wants me to get married again. I'm not even divorced. And you're telling me that I shouldn't go out of my house because I'm, you know, I was like, it was just so many people had so many opinions about what I should and should not be doing.
Oh my gosh.
And it was really hard. And so when I actually met Lenny, I remember telling him, well, we can't tell anyone we're dating. He was like, well, why? And I was like, because I do not want anyone's opinion. Because I do not want to mask the voice of God.
Wow. You know?
And it was really hard for me to tell people that we were dating. And of course, you know, God does all things well.
He does.
And he knew, even though I did not want to get into a new relationship when I met my husband, he knew that he knew what was around the corner. And he knew that Lenny was going to be the perfect partner for me. But it's complicated. And I really appreciate you talking about how complicated it is with, you know, widows and singles and people who are divorced, because, you know, we're coming up on Mother's Day in mm-hmm. a couple of mm-hmm. weeks. And, you know, it's such a hard time for me because not just because of my own fertility issues, but because I feel like the women that I know that I see who don't have children, who serve, I don't think that there's a lot of opportunity or place in the church to honor them in the way that they should be honored.
Mm.
And I don't want to take away from moms because, oh my gosh, like everyone who I know who is a mom. And I mean, one of my best friends would say I'm a mom too, that I'm the mom to her kids and their godmom, but that's a life, right? That's a sacrifice. So I want to honor them, but it's complicated. And I don't think we take enough time to really address those complications in a way that's helpful for everyone. I will say that once I kind of got through my last cancer and infertility issues, and I started thinking about writing this book, which I just wrote a book. Comes out August 4th. You can pre-order it now on Amazon and Barnes and Noble and different places. It's called Make Room for Joy. And when I started thinking about writing this book, really it was God who kept telling me, and I did not want to do it. And people kept telling me to write a book. And I was like, you write a book. I do not want to write a book. Someone else write a book.
Right.
But it really came down to, at some point I had to stop running away from it. Like God was like, I want you to tell your story. I didn't keep you alive for just so you could go about your life. You said you wanted to be used. You said that you wanted your story to encourage and inspire others. Well, here's your opportunity. You're going to have to sit down and do the work.
Wow. So good.
And I think that was a really, I think that's a really important lesson I learned about writing the book, is that so many of us want to, me included, want to have this great impact. And it's like, we want God to enlarge our territory, and we want to, whatever it is, you know, do great at our job, be the best mother ever, be some sort of influencer, be a speaker, be a writer, be whatever. And ultimately, at some point, God is like, I need you to submit yourself to me and be willing to do whatever work it is that I want you to do.
Wow. So, yep.
And work is called work for a reason.
Because it's work.
Right? And it doesn't matter if you love it or if you're called to it, it's still work. And it still takes sacrifice. When I realized that God had really called me to write this book, it took sacrifice. And it wasn't just sacrifice for me. It was for my husband. It was for the people that care about me. There were so many weekends where everyone was going to the movies and I was like, sorry, I worked all week and now I'm going to get up and write all day. You know, I took a major leave from my ministry, singing, which I love to sing, because I had to focus on what God had put before me. I took a huge break from social media because I had to focus on what God had placed before me. And so many of us want to focus on what we think God has for us in the future, but we don't take the time to focus on what God has placed before us today.
Yeah.
And I think that's often why we're dissatisfied. Because if God has given us our daily bread, then he's given us everything we need today to be totally satisfied.
Amen.
Yet, we so often want to look beyond that daily satisfaction to almost like stock up on the satisfaction of the future. And that's the mentality, right, that we have as human beings. It's why we have no toilet paper left in the world, right? But as a Christian, as a woman of God, as a woman of faith, we are told that we don't have to stock up on the joy of tomorrow, because there are mercies every day, new mercies. There is joy every morning. Like, we do not have to stock up on the satisfaction of tomorrow. We don't have to stock up on the validation of tomorrow or the promotion of tomorrow, because God has given us our daily bread. He's given us exactly what we need for today if we're willing to eat it.
So one of the things that I love about you, Vanessa, is that you are what I would call a joy preacher and speaker, right? You exude joy. You know, you write a lot about joy. Joy is your middle name.
Yes.
Literally. So, but what does that look like in a tangible, practical, everyday, life. What does that look like to wake up? And maybe when you wake up, you're not filled with joy because you're thinking about something that happened yesterday or worried about tomorrow, right? How do you practice joy every single day?
That's a really great question. And I'd like to say I have a perfect answer and I don't. So I'll just say that first, that the reason why I talk about joy so much is because I've struggled so much with holding on to it. Mm. And I think that's a really important point to make, that I don't know anyone that wakes up every day and is joyful. I'm sorry. Like, whatever. Listen, if you find them, I would like to speak with them too.
Seriously.
But one of the things that I realized, it really came to a head when I was sick the first time. You know, I grew up in the church, always hearing about joy, you know, Bible verses and songs and all that stuff. And I, even though I knew that joy and happiness were probably a little bit different, I really saw them as the same thing. But when I got sick the first time and I was in the middle of this horrible separation and just in a horrible place in my life, I realized that there was nothing really to be happy about. Like, there was nothing to be happy about. You know, anyone that would be happy about getting cancer, being betrayed, you know, having a crappy career, there's nothing to be happy about that. And so I was like, well, I'm so depressed, I'm filled with anxiety, I don't think that I'm going to survive. Mm. And so realizing that joy could exist, even though I wasn't finding things to be happy about, was the lifeline that I needed to survive. Mm-hmm. And it started really small. You know, I remember reading this really great book by Henry Nouwen, and it's really where I first, it kind of hit me, this idea that joy and happiness are different. And he talks about, you know, having to choose joy every day and having access to joy all the time when you are a Christian, because we have access to God.
Yeah.
And when we choose God, we choose joy. And allowing myself to kind of sit with that reality, it took time for me to discover what joy was for me. Mm-hmm. And what I realized is that practicing joy is about practicing all kinds of other things. It's about practicing generosity. It's about practicing gratitude. It's about practicing sacrifice. It's about practicing rest. It's about practicing the things that need to be done today, because joy is different all the time. Joy isn't just one thing. You know, joy isn't just loud and jubilant. Joy is, it can be all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Depending on the moment. And I would say that the first thing I do to practice joy is I practice gratitude. And I know that sounds so cliche because everyone talks about gratitude right now. But I will say that checking gratitude off your list is different than practicing gratitude. Mm-hmm. Having a gratitude journal and saying, okay, today I'm going to write my gratitude journal and I'm going to say 5 things I'm grateful for. Check, check, check. That's different than practicing gratitude. Practicing gratitude for me is the process of really telling myself about myself sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, when I'm having a moment of like, woe is me, and, you know, look at this, and, you know, this is going to happen in my life. And it's like God says, dude, can you get it together for a second? Can you have a little perspective? Can you take a moment and look at the daily bread that I've given to you? Can you take a moment and just look at how I've sustained you every single day of your life and kept you and given you more than you've even asked and exceeded your expectations? And can you please turn yourself towards hope and turn yourself away from the fear and worry that's taking up all the space in your life. Because it's hard to practice gratitude if there's no room for it.
Right.
If your life is full of worry and anxiety and jealousy and comparison and all of these other things that we often fill ourselves up with, there's not room for gratitude. And so you have to make space for it. You have to make space to see the gifts of today.
I love that. Yeah. Like, joy is basically your self-care.
You know, it really is. And it's one of the things I talk about in my life is I talk about your self-care equation. Mm-hmm. And I did this for myself a long time ago because people started talking a lot about self-care. And again, it became kind of a cliche thing. Right. And I was like, well, what is that? Okay. So you like take time for yourself and you have a bath or whatever. I don't know. Okay. You know, like, and I would start to do that. I was like, okay, I'm going to self-care. I'm going to have a bath. And I'm going to have a glass of champagne. I'm going to put music on. And right. I would do all of these things. And I would feel just as anxious when I got out of the bathtub as I, right. you know what
I mean? Absolutely.
So what is self-care then? And what I realized is that it's just, again, it's organic. It's different. So sometimes I have to stop in the morning on a Saturday or on a Wednesday or on a Tuesday. And I have to say, like, I have to evaluate, number one, where is my joy today?
Mm-hmm.
What is my joy quotient today?
Yeah.
Where is it? Okay. If it's low, if it's high, if it's medium, let's evaluate that. Okay. Now let's look at what kind of things do you need to do for yourself to increase that? And some days that might be an extra cup of coffee plus a walk in the woods plus a glass of wine.
Always a glass of wine.
That might be the self-care equation for that day. Another day, it might be laying in bed for most of the day, spending extra time with the Lord, mm-hmm. having a FaceTime with my mom. That mm-hmm. might be the self-care for another day. And it's always changing depending mm-hmm. on where I am in my life. And it's unique to who I am. It's like a fingerprint. What I need is for me. What you need is for you. And recognizing that in other people, I think is really important too, as we care for our friends and family, because, you know, what you need isn't what I need. So if I try to give you what I need,
right,
that's not really caring for you.
That's not caring for me. Yeah.
And I notice that a lot when people are sick, people do that. They want to help you, but instead of really asking what you need, they give you what they think you need, or ultimately they give you what's easy for them to give.
Right.
You know, if I had one more box of chocolates when I had cancer, I was like, dude, I'm not eating chocolate right now. Please keep them for yourself. Right. Or, you know, I don't want a visitor. If you're coming over to help me clean my house, awesome. If you're coming over to sit on my couch and ask me how I'm doing, please send a card. You know, like, so often we make our care for others about ourselves, and we make our care for ourselves about ourselves.
Yeah. And
I think that self-care really is at its best when we do it so that we're building ourselves up so we can be generous with other people, so we can be generous with our joy, so that we can be generous with the care we have for other people. Because if it stops with us, then it's just selfish. It's just narcissism. Yeah. It's just about us.
Yeah.
The whole point in life, I think, is to give back.
It is to give back.
The whole point of joy is to have so much of it that it's easy to share. Because joy is contagious. You very rarely meet a joyful person that people are always miserable around them, you know? So I think that it's all it's all interconnected. And I definitely think that part of practicing joy is making room for it. And that's, you know, I struggled with what to name the book. And when I was working with one of my editors, you know, she's like, you say make room for joy so much. She's like, that's what the name of the book needs to be. And what I've realized is that to make room for joy, often you have to get rid of things, sometimes physical things, sometimes emotional things, people, jobs, addictions.
Yeah.
Often we have to do less so that God can do more.
So good.
And that is what makes room for all that God has for us. Because the world tells us we need to hustle towards something. Mm-hmm.
For sure.
But God tells us all we have to do is rest.
Mm-hmm.
And allow our work to be unto him. Don't be lazy.
Right.
Do what you know. Don't do what you don't know. And trust that he's going to exceed your expectations. He gives us a roadmap for success. Yet, we are so often drawn to the roadmap that the world shows us because we can see the end. But God doesn't want us to see the end because his end is so much more complicated than we can comprehend. And I wasted so many years of my life trying to understand what was going on. And once I realized, you know what? It's not my job to understand. There was so much more room for joy in my life. Like now I'm like, I don't understand how that's going to work out. I don't understand why this happened. I don't need to understand.
Yeah.
I don't need to understand why some people have babies and some people don't. I don't need to understand why some people step into their calling right away and other people are almost 45 like me and they're just figuring it out. I don't need to understand why some people get married at 21 and have these great relationships and 5 million kids, and some people don't get married until they're 50. I don't need to understand that. What I do need to understand is who God says I am.
Yes.
And why God says I am that way. And what God says about who I am in the world. And what God says about my worth. And what God says about the power that I have that I can get through him, because we all have so many superpowers that we do not tap into. And when you talk about care, listen, we have the ability to comfort others with the same comfort that the God who part sees gives to us. That's what the Bible says. The Bible says that I will comfort you so that you can comfort others in the same way. I mean, think about that. That is a kind of an astonishing thing to really think about, that we have access to that kind of care, that we can offer that kind of care to others. But we can only offer that kind of care to others if we are willing to be in a place where we need to accept that kind of comfort and care from the Almighty God.
Mm-hmm.
And to understand suffering, you have to suffer. To understand pain, you have to be open to experiencing pain. And when we can step into someone's pain with them, instead of just trying to pull them out of it right away, we are doing a greater service to everyone in our lives, because there is a purpose for our pain. The more you allow yourself to embrace the opportunities that are embedded in the problems, the more useful you will be to the world and to God, because you now can recognize the pain in other people.
Yeah.
And you now know more intuitively how to offer up care in a way that's helpful. You now can recognize the opportunities that are embedded in a problem. And you don't have to be a pessimist. You don't have to be a pessimist to say, okay, here's a problem. Now that's a problem. You can see the opportunity because you're not afraid of stepping into the pain. You're not afraid of stepping into the problem. We waste so much time trying to avoid the obstacles instead of preparing ourselves to get over the obstacle.
Yeah. No, I think this is, I love everything, Vanessa, like you have said, and especially making room for joy. As you were saying that, I almost got this visual. Right now I'm in the process of cleaning out my apartment and decluttering.
Yeah.
But that is what I'm doing. I'm making room for the joy.
Yep.
And it's kind of like that decluttering of the mind, decluttering of the soul. You know, you're taking out those distractions, taking out those things that maybe have hindered you, maybe those past experiences and, you know, the what I don't understand and the things that I don't know. You're kind of decluttering those things and making room for the joy that comes from just the peace of God, the joy that comes from knowing who you are, you know, which is, I think, a message that every woman needs to be reminded of, you know. So if you can, you know, maybe what is the one thing, as a summation of, and obviously not a summation of your life or your book, but what's the one takeaway, you know, for those that are, you know, your book hasn't been released yet, but we want to make sure that people pre-order it. We want to make sure that they get that book, that they know that they can make room for joy. But what is that thing that, you know, you want them with the book in their hand? What is that takeaway that you want them to have at the end of those chapters?
Yeah. When I started writing this book, I wanted to, my hope was, is that people would not walk away just learning about my story. I never wanted to just write a memoir, write a book about my story. So I was like, who am I? My story is just one of many. My hope is that when people close this book, they finish reading it, they are able to see their own circumstances differently and see God in their circumstances differently. And through that, open up to the possibility that joy is all around them and that it is possible to empty yourself out of the fear and empty yourself out of the pain and empty yourself out of the hurt and empty yourself out of all of the offenses, the things that have been done to you, the things that you have done to yourself, and empty yourself out of all of those things so that you can be so filled up with joy that you always have extra. You always have more. Because when we allow ourselves to stay filled up with past regret, past pain, things that are unresolved fear, unforgiveness, we may try to do some quick fixes. We may get a great podcast and it may make us feel good for a second. We may go to an awesome conference and we're on fire for one moment. And we may do a gratitude journal and that works for a second. But when our cup is full of all those other things, it doesn't matter how much gratitude or joy you add to the top. It's always going to fall out. So my hope is that people will be inspired and encouraged to step bravely into their pain, deal with it, look it straight in the eye and say, if God is for me, who can be against me?
Come on.
I'm going to wrestle with this and I'm going to figure out where the opportunity is in this, where the possibilities lie here, because I know that God has a purpose for my pain, that God has a purpose for my life, that He is going to exceed my expectations. It doesn't matter what's been done to me, what I've done to myself. It doesn't matter, because what God says goes.
Yeah.
And my hope is that people will walk away knowing that it's possible that whatever's happened to them doesn't dictate the possibility for greater things to happen in their future. And that they will really have the courage to do what's needed to be done to make room for the joy and the peace and the hope that will sustain them and help them thrive. Because none of us just want to survive.
No.
We want to thrive.
Yeah. That's awesome, Vanessa. Thank you so much for sharing, for caring, you know, for being such a joy giver, right? Mm-hmm. I normally call people caretakers, but you're not taking anything. You're giving joy. So thank you for being who you are explicitly and authentically who God has made you to be. Thank you for making room for your joy so that we can all learn to make room for the joy that is so set before us. So thank you so much. Oh,
thanks for having me. I look forward to connecting with everyone somewhere, somehow.
And tell us, when is Make Room for Joy coming out? What date and where can they get it?
So it comes out August 4th is the release date. You can pre-order it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You'll be able to pre-order it from my website soon as well, but the links for ordering are on my website, VanessaJoyWalker.com. And you can find me on social media, Vanessa Joy Walker, LinkedIn, you know, Facebook, Instagram. And yeah, say hi.
I hope that you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. And I hope that as you go about the next few weeks, whether you're still working from home or if you're going back to the office or going back to a new normal, I pray that you learn how to make room for joy and also to care deeply for yourself, your community, and others.